Lord Russell, I'd like to clear up something that's bothered me. We live in a time where if someone doesn't agree with you particularly or like you, they tend to call you a communist. And that's an epithet, a dirty word. Your effort, your philosophy, and your dedication has been labeled with the communist charge. Lord Russell is a communist. How do you feel about that when they say it?
Oh, well, I know they do it in America. They don't do it much anywhere else because it's so palpably ridiculous. Remember that in 1920, when almost all tall left-wing people in Western Europe were applauding the Russian Revolution, I wrote a book against it, saying that the regime they were establishing was abominable and was going to be worse. And so it was. And nobody who's at all well-informed can think that I'm a communist. But in America, it's used as a swear word. You just label a person that. If you're in favor of world government, you're supposed to be a communist. If you're in favor of almost anything that is good, you're a communist. And it's just a dishonest swear word, and that's all.
Do you get angry anymore?
Oh, no. Nothing worth getting angry about.
Something else occurred to me. When you got up in the House of Lords, immediately after the dropping of the bomb, some 3 months after we dropped the atomic bomb at Hiroshima, you addressed the House of Lords.
Yeah.
And you projected not alone that this would become a menace to human life, but that even superior weapons, I think you predicted the hydrogen bomb.
Yeah.
What do you think is the future of weaponry? Is there something worse coming than what we've now got?
Yes. There are a lot of much worse things coming. Now, take, for instance, the business of establishing stations on the moon, which is being very seriously considered, indeed, both in America and in Russia. I noticed an official statement by the American government saying, if the United States had a base on the moon, any enemy would have to launch an overwhelming attack towards the moon from its own land bases before attacking the United States, or face certain massive destruction from moon bases 48 hours later. That is an official statement, and the United States government is busy spending money with a view to establishing a nuclear base on the moon. And this statement is very typical of militarists who have always, all through history, been very silly. It doesn't think that possibly the Russians might do something of the same sort. It thinks only of the United States doing it. Now, the Russians have proved themselves at least as good as the United States in this matter of projectiles. So that it's pretty certain that if the United States got established on the moon, so would the Russians. And you would have these two hostile weaponries in the moon. And, of course, the first thing they would do would be to destroy each other. And it would be much cheaper to have them destroy each other at home.
Lord Russell, what do you think are the odds on survival, on our avoiding a nuclear catastrophe?
I think I put the chances about 6 against survival to 4 in favor. That's just a guess. I think, on the whole, it's probable that the human race will not survive, but it's only slightly more probable than the other. Of course, there are many other things. Now, take, for instance, what they call the doomsday machine. The doomsday machine is a machine which will certainly destroy everybody. It's quite easy to make. It may, for aught we know, have already been made, because it wouldn't be mentioned if it had. But anyway, it's quite easy to make. It should be just a cobalt bomb. And if somebody had this machine, which Khan says he could make himself if he wanted to, if somebody had this machine, their position from the point of view of blackmail would be simply marvelous.
What is a doomsday machine?
It spreads lethal fallout throughout the whole world. And cobalt makes a very bad, very lethal kind of fallout. And you've only got, instead of at present, the outer integument of an H-bomb is uranium-238, ordinary uranium. Instead of that, if you put cobalt, it would do far more harm. Only as a weapon of war, it has the disadvantage that it harms everybody equally, the enemy. But it's quite clear that if a madman like Hitler came along, he would think, oh, this is grand. And he would say, well, now, look here, I can blow you all up to smithereens. I know I should blow myself up too, but what of that? I'm a fine hero. I say, give me liberty or give me death. And I shall blow you all up if you don't do everything I say. Where should we be?
Lord Russell, you were quoted as having said that if Russia were still czarist, the situation would be precisely what it is today. Do you mean that?
Yes, I mean that exactly. I think all this ideology stuff is just nonsense, hypocrisy. The real truth is simply a conflict of power. And if you have two great powers like that, they will hate each other. And ideology has nothing whatever to do with it.
You know, you have been attributed as being the father of the Better Red Than Dead movement.
Oh, that's quite untrue. It was invented in Germany, and I've never accepted that slogan at all because it's a false antithesis. There's not the slightest reason to think that you must be either red or dead. There is a real antithesis, which is either dead or alive. That is a real antithesis, and that you have to think about. But it would be perfectly easy if people wanted to, if the West wanted to, it would be quite easy to reach an agreement with Russia, which would leave the West intact and to do its own jobs in its own way. So that there's no need whatever to choose between red and dead. I will, in fairness, I will say this, that I think a world entirely governed by the Kremlin or a world entirely governed by Wall Street would be better than one in which there were no human beings, because it might improve. There's plenty of evidence of that. Take the Mongols. Genghis Khan was quite as bad as Hitler, every bit as bad. And he conquered an enormous part of the world, all the way from China to the Baltic. And it looked awfully bad. But his grandson, Kublai Khan, was a most cultivated and civilized and humane monarch under whom China was very happy. So that even when villains conquer, it doesn't mean that they're there forever. So that I should say to a Russian, look, if the world was all capitalist, it would still be better than if there were no human beings. And I should say to an American, if the world were all communist, it would still be better than no world, because it might improve. But I should always add, this is a false alternative. You haven't got to make that choice.
I see. What are those things in American life that distress you most, Lord Russell?
That distress me most?
Yes. You find us wanting.
I think the fundamental thing that distresses me in America is submission to the herd. It seems to be very difficult for most Americans to think anything that isn't thought by the herd. It's like schoolboys. Schoolboys always persecute any other schoolboy who doesn't quite fit in. And they have that instinct rather strong.
And what other factors Are there any that come to mind?
Oh, I think that's the chief one. And, of course, a certain openness to propaganda, a certain... well, I mean, they haven't much sales resistance.
They haven't much sales resistance. You said that you felt that the American pattern or the American way of life was seemed to be inevitably Britain's way, and you bemoan that. Do you still feel that Britain is patterning itself too much on America?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to stir up anti-American feeling. I mean, I don't want anti-feeling anywhere. I'm not at all keen on stirring up anti-American feeling. I think there are a great many things in America which I know are welcome to the great majority of Europeans when they first come across them. European immigrants, when they go to America, generally think this is lovely, and that opinion deserves to be respected.
You commented, I thought, very interestingly on American nationalism or American patriotism. You said that because we were a country born of many immigrations, it was very difficult for the national fervor to generate itself.
It's partly that. It's partly the effort you've had to put into schooling in America. You've had to emphasize nationalism in schools because you had such a large number of people who were not born American and had to be assimilated rather quickly. I think that was quite inevitable. But I think there are other factors too. I mean... partly that you've never been defeated in a war, and partly that you are very powerful. England was just as bad while England was on top.
People on top tend to be bad. We have to pause again, Lord Russell, very briefly. We'll resume in a moment. What do you think the likelihood of war if the present policies of the great powers are pursued?
I'm afraid that if present policies continue, war is almost certain within a certain period. It will be likely within 10 years and practically certain within 20. There are so many things that may cause war without anybody particularly intending it. In the first place, there's mere mistakes. Over and over again, natural phenomena have been mistaken on radar for Russian bombs, and the bombers have been ordered up into the air to go to Russia. And so far, the mistake has been discovered in time. Once it was the moon, several times it was a flight of geese, and so forth. But... it's been a close shave that it was discovered in time. And sooner or later, it's pretty certain that it won't be, so that Western bombers will go simply by mistake and bomb Russia. And then, of course, Russia will retaliate, and you're in it. Then there's another great danger, I think, a very, very great danger, which is that... somebody will become rather mad. Somebody will have a nervous breakdown. That's a thing that, after all, is very likely. And take, say, a commander of a Polaris. There he is isolated. He's, of course, in telegraphic communication with Washington. But he's not in human contact with anybody except his own crew. And he may very easily think, oh, these people at home, they're dilatory. The Russian danger is getting greater day by day. We're bound to be defeated if we wait. It's my duty, my solemn duty, to bring on a war here and now. And any commander of... a submarine that had H-bombs on it, it could bring on a war because he could cause an incident which would be interpreted in Russia as a hostile act by the government, and then they would retaliate. And there are all sorts of different ways in which a war by accident may come on. And I think we mustn't forget what I spoke of a moment ago, new things, which is bases in the moon or perhaps in Mars and Venus and so forth. Nor must we forget chemical and biological warfare. All these things are bound, absolutely bound, to get more and more dangerous with the progress of scientific knowledge.
I know your answer to this personally, but I wonder about your answer philosophically. The average person, whether he be American or English or French or whatever, feels so helpless and ineffectual in this technological age, the age of great power blocks and great combines, to be able to move mountains, to be able to make his protests felt. What do you say to that person?
Oh, the answer is quite simple, and we've found it here in England. I mean, our movement is a popular movement in which anybody can take part and anybody can feel that he's doing his little bit. It may be a little bit because he's not a learned or powerful person, but he's doing something. And it's one of the things that we feel to be liberating in our movement, that we give everybody something he can do.